Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Disturbing Interest is a Horrible Histories, Terrible Mysteries podcast. The past, and sometimes the present, are often a bleak place. Listener discretion is advised.
If you're a fan of Disturbing Interests, please like and subscribe. And for the love of God, tell a friend about us. Pretend you're a Mormon. Go door to door with the good news of Disturbing Interests. Preach our gospel, brothers and sisters.
Welcome back to Disturbing Interests, ladies and gentlemen.
To the world at large.
I am Regina King.
Because remember,
your evilest queen,
you might be
disturbed, sitting in her own,
but you're not alone.
Lovely house is my gorgeous bomb ass partner.
Oh yeah. Hi, it's me, Red Dot Rudolph the Red-Nosed Hitler. No, I'm for those of you watching, hi, I'm Lynn, your docent of darkness. But for people that are actually looking at the video of us, I noticed that underneath my nose, like on the little, there's a cool name for that. It's kind of the septum, but there's that. What is the name of that cool divot? There's a name for the cool divot.
I don't know. I always think of it as, the divot from the movie, The Prophecy. I think of it as Christopher Walken's divot.
There is a cool name for it, and I can't remember what it is. But anyway, I have a weird red dot. It's not itchy. It's not. There's nothing. I was outside. I smell like compost, just so y'all know. So it's good that we do not have smell-o-vision, because I was out in the yard planting and digging because it's spring. And maybe this is like pollen-induced, but it's just a little red dot. And I look like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Hitler, and I have cool yard hair. So sorry in advance for this. I did not prepare for video, but here we are.
You may smell of compost, but I look of compost because my life has been stupid lately, and this is the best I could do. Like, I am upright, and that is an improvement from yesterday when I was not.
Yeah, you threw your back out. Like, are you like, I'm telling this story on painkillers, or are you all right? All right-ish.
I'm not fully sober, if that's what you're asking
me. Okay, cool. Whatever, you know, whatever it takes, man. Yeah. No, back stuff is not, you should not mess with back stuff. Back stuff is bad.
No,
bad muscle, times.
Muscle yeah. relaxers are my friend. And if I sound a little wackier than normal, well, guys, just know this be how it be sometimes.
I'm sorry.
What we get. That's all right, man. It is what it is. And in the same breath, this episode is probably not going to be nearly as edited as it normally is because I can't sit in this chair for that long. So, you know, it is what it is.
I just picture you like suspended in traction, just kind of going on the keyboard.
Oh, I'd love that. I would love that right now if I was like suspended and weightless in traction in front of this thing with, you know, truly with the size of the screen and like the setup. I forgot to tell you, we got a new computer. We being Mr. Meow got this new high tech fancy computer. I still have my laptop, but that is what I'm using. And I kind of really feel like our computer area is slowly turning into a spaceship. And what y'all can't see is behind the monitor in front of me on the two walls, because I'm sitting in a corner, Neko has 8 cat platforms all around. So when she gets up here and does the shark tail thing, she can then go up and just dive on a platform and then hop all around and be meowing as much in my face as she wants to. Why? Because she is the queen. She is the queen who deserves to be in high places, look down upon me and tell me, oh yes, there you are, you slovenly bitch, you. I lord over you as your cat. Now make with the typing. Make with the typing. Because that's what she does. That's how she be.
So you basically have your own personal, like, cat circus, like, 3-ring cat circus just happening?
Yes, nice. I do at nice. All times. It's yes, it brings me much pleasure knowing that she has fun looking out the window and jumping all around on her little platforms behind our giant monitor. It gives Mr. Mao a great deal of anxiety.
She's like, I'm going to break this expensive piece of equipment. Just wait. It's going to happen.
Because she is not the most graceful cat.
Well, she's not the springiest of chickens either, is she not? She's an older, a mature lady.
Oh, she is straight out an old curmudgeon. She is 14 years old. I mean, that's super old in cat years. Even though she is wee and acts like she is young, much like me, she's just immature and goofy as fuck. And you can tell her age because it meets you in anger and bitterness. And you know what? Same. I hear that you went on a detective adventure?
I did. Well, no, I did not really need a detective adventure. I solved, to my satisfaction, like, okay, there's not a definitive answer, but I was racist mystery Nancy Drew.
Sorry. Wait a minute. What?
Racist Wait, mystery Nancy Drew.
Were you solving the mystery for racist or about racist?
About racist.
Okay. That makes it better.
No. Yes.
Yeah, we do racist no favors here.
No, this is cartoon racism that I was like, but why? So I don't know. I can't even remember where this came about. I think it was Dr. Seuss related. So
that would fit.
So, okay. If you look at, no, it wasn't that. I remember exactly what it was. For some reason, the We Are Siamese, If You Please, a segment from Lady and the Tramp came across my feed. And I was like,
yeah,
I haven't seen this since I was literally a kid. How bad is, oh, so
it bad.
It's yeah. I mean, it's the, but
yeah,
the part where I was
bad.
Like, for real, guys? So they have little fangs, like, because cats have little fangs, right? Which, not racist, just a fact of cats. But because these were Siamese cats, they had, like, bucktooth fangs. They made the fangs bucktooth. And I was like, okay, I am quite aware that the racist caricature stereotype for Asian people, Asian American, Asian people, is the bucktooth, right? Buck teeth. Squinty eyes and buck teeth. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm saying that is what it looks like. And then I was like, okay, I understand where the slanty squinty eye shit comes from. Like, you shouldn't do that, but I understand that the shape, the Asian eye shape is different than the typical European eye shape. Oh, okay. But the buck tooth bullshit, like, what's that about? Because when I look at Asian people of a variety, I don't see big teeth, right? Like, it seems like a weird thing to add. And I was like, when did this start? And I thought, okay, well, maybe like, okay, so during World War II, terrible racist caricatures of Tojo and of the Japanese people were very popular because those were the bad guys, right? Maybe Tojo has funky teeth. No, just looks like a guy, looks like a dude. And then I was like, well, how far back? So, boy, it's fun to Google racist stereotypes. It's really fun. I highly recommend it. Just great for the soul.
Did you end up on the list? Did you get yourself on a list?
So, but I was curious, like, how far back does that big buck teeth bullshit go? And, like, way back into the 1800s. Because, of course, let's make shitty racist stereotypes of caricatures of Asian people because of the Asian Exclusion Act and come work on our railroads, now fuck off. Like, that kind of shit. So it's been around as long as we've been drawing shitty racist caricatures in, you know, American and European newspapers. So I was like, huh. So I just Googled. I was like, does anybody else have this stupid-ass question? And some genius was like, okay, here's my theory, and I'm 100% sold in this theory. If you are a caricaturist or a cartoonist, and you're trying to draw a picture of something, like a facial expression, you usually have a mirror that you look in, and you exaggerate. You're like, what does a smile look like? Hee-hee, you know, just to get a sense for what that looks like. If you're trying to squint your eyes to make that shitty racist stereotype, when you squint, like, everybody try this at home, squint and see if your teeth don't buck out. And you're like, when you try to squint, yeah, see, your teeth kind of do that.
Yeah, your face pulls in.
Yep, and right, it makes your teeth stick up. Yeah, stick out. And I think
you're smiling when you do it.
It really, you're like, you look like Bucky Beaver. And I think I agree, what probably happened was one of the first assholes who was like, I'm going to stereotype what Asian people look like to make a terrible caricature that I can put in a periodical of some kind, squinted their eyes to see what that would look like, and they made the buck teeth while they were doing it, and was like, aha, that must be what Asian people look like, buck teeth. And then everybody afterwards was like, oh, that must be what Asian people look like, I'll draw buck teeth. And that bullshit just stuck down through the ages. So there you go. I solved a shitty racist caricature mystery that had been bugging me for a while. So anyway, I don't know that that's helpful or useful, but I thought it was sort of an interesting, like, horrible rabbit hole to go down. And we are, you know, disturbing interests. So there you go. So yeah, basically that is that's why I think the horrible bucktooth racist caricature stereotype exists. Because some cartoonist somewhere looked in a mirror, squinted his eyes, and went, oh, bucky teeth. There you go. Yep.
That's fascinating. And anyone out there, if you know another reason or theory, hypothesis, tell us, because at this point we're invested.
Be racist Veronica Mars, if you want. I'm racist Nancy Drew. So,
Anti-racist. Can we call it anti-racist?
Yeah, let's go. Yes. The racism detectives. And very specific races. Like, I am fascinated by terrible stereotypes and terrible caricatures because, again, I come from a cartooning and art background. I'm like, why did we decide, like, why do these tropes exist? Why did we decide visually this is what an Asian person looks like? This is what an Italian, this is what, like, why did we latch on to a particular visual, you know, image that was like, this is the guy? I find it fascinating. Like, it horrible, but fascinating.
It
so,
is.
Yeah, there you go.
Interesting.
Racist mystery possibly solved.
Did I send you the TikTok of the woman breaking down
The Degas is actually... Yes. Okay, that's a neat theory.
Okay,
that's
hold
bullshit
on.
In the extreme, but sure, lady. Sure.
So, for our listeners and our viewers, those of you who do not automatically read our mind and know what we're talking about here, I sent a clip that was, it was fascinating in the devolving rabbit hole spiral-like thing that it was, which was
Art History QAnon. It was great. Yeah.
It was. That's exactly what it was. It was Edward Degas is actually Jack the Ripper. And I have this theory before.
Sure. Sure. He could be. Yeah.
I mean, who couldn't be Jack the Ripper
sure,
at this point?
Right?
But it was fascinating. It was fascinating. It was a practice in what the fuckery. And man, it is one of those things where I could see people who don't know enough about Degas, which, I mean, he was not a good dude. She was definitely right there. But interesting.
Was he a murderer who was like, I'm going to take the train to a foreign country to kill random women who later people will be like, they're all sex workers, when they were not in fact sex workers. They were just homeless and hungry. And I think that'll be fun for me to do. Let's do that. Yeah, no, I don't think he was like, he's like, I'm going to paint some ballerinas in the day. And then at night, I'm going to stalk Whitechapel and murder some bitches. Like, I don't. Sure. Yeah, okay. That's sure. Yes.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go home. I'm going to squint in a mirror. I'm going to draw some racist caricatures. It was Degas. He came up with the racist caricatures and he killed those ladies. Yes.
It was all Degas.
Yeah,
fault.
It was Degas. One hundo.
Now that we have solved the crime in
Cheers.
Our anti-racist ways. Oh, mercy. Alrighty. Well, what are you drinking today?
Oh, I have, I love that I can hold this up. I have Cazadores. The with has a really cool. It's got the deer on it.
It's very pretty and pink.
It is a Paloma. It is 100% agave tequila, Cazadores Blanco, natural flavors, and grapefruit soda. It seemed like it would be refreshing after me grubbing around in the earth outside.
It seems kind of like you're sunny. About to be like, you don't know my life.
Okay. Okay, that opened pretty nicely.
You had to work for that one.
It smells like...
It smells like a mistake.
It has a hint of, it's grapefruity, but it's like grapefruit with like a funky, like, sorry, Cazadores, we're not sponsored by them, or if we were, we sure wouldn't be after this. It smells a little bit like cat pee, just a little skosh. So Sauvignon Blanc has a cat pee aroma. Like, if you ask, you know, Google that, like, sommeliers will be like, yeah, no, that's totally a thing. But I don't know if Palomas should. No, a little bit. Like, trust me on this, guys. Trust me. It's a little bit of... Not in... And here's the part that's weird. Not in an unpleasant way? All right, here we go.
When exactly did you start thinking cat pee near my mouth? Not a thing that's going to be a tip-off against an error.
So... It's not bad, actually. Like, the taste is better. And once you've tasted it, it has less of the cat wee aroma. it's got a weird, funky, like a caramely. It's got like a caramel, burnt sugar situation. Not in a bad way. There's a lot going on in this drink. A lot.
I am dying over this one. This is so good.
It's not bad. Like, and it doesn't taste like a headache. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, I know exactly what you mean when it comes to tequila.
It's 5.9%. So I was like, okay, this isn't going to like, I'm not going to be like, I love to talk about stuff. Like, I wasn't going to, why was this not going to be a sloppy episode?
I mean, it might be because of me.
This is what you would take on the hot tub boat. Have I told you about my obsession with the hot tub boats?
I am obsessed with them water, too.
It's water floating on water in a boat. Let's put water in a boat. Like, why is that a good idea?
And
like,
it just seems like you'll die. Like a year out.
Yeah. People want to do this.
I am people.
Do I? Like, I can swim really well, so maybe I do.
I do. I 100% do. I can swim well enough. I'll make it if the boat sinks. Oh, okay, like, I do. Yeah, no, I do.
I mean, I look at those and I'm like, should we? You know, like, I don't know my feelings about the hot tub boat. Like, other than that, it fascinates me and it feels sort of Dada-esque or like infinite recursion of water in a boat. Like, I want to go on one. And I want to get in the hot tub, and then I want to have a tiny floaty boat that I have a little tub in the boat so that it can be like infinite. Yes. That's what I want.
Yes, we will be an M.C. Escher painting. Take a selfie and put it on our Instagram. This is what I'm talking about.
We could like open a portal to another dimension, which at this point I'm like, please, can I go?
If it's a dimension that is opened by hot tub boats, yes. Yes, I am for this.
It's hot tub time machine. That's what we're going to do. That's exactly what we're going to do. Hot tub time machine. We're going to go back in time. We're going to find we're going to find Edgar Degas, who's sitting there squinting, going, I want to draw a terrible racist cartoon and then kill some ladies, and we'll kill him first. Let's go back in time to kill Edgar Degas before he can murder the Whitechapel women and come up with a horrible racist caricature trope. Let's do it.
There are so many people who are on that list first before Degas.
Well, sure. Yeah. Get in line. But yes. Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah,
exactly. You're right. I like it. Well, I have a horrible update that I'm going to share with everybody because I can't live with this knowledge alone. I shared it with you already because I'm just like, nope, I'm not okay. I mean, not okay.
It's weird and a little creepy. I'm not going to lie, but I'm not as horrified because I don't have the same deep-seated phobia that you do, but yeah, it's a fairly creepy fact. It's a weird fact.
I have not gone a day without thinking about this fact at least 5 times since finding it out. So if you are afraid of spiders, arachnophobic, just go ahead and skip forward about a minute. Because I am about to share that there is an entire fucking atmospheric layer of spiders just hanging above us because apparently God decided spiders are his favorite creatures and he just wants to keep them close. Just hanging out, drifting in this atmospheric layer, just fucking balloon spiders everywhere. And you know what? I'm not okay. Because, yeah, they're up there now, but what happens when they decide to come down?
So, okay, questions I have about this are there areas where there are thicker layers and areas where there might not be any, like a hole in the ozone layer, a hole in the spider layer? So we could figure out where that hole is. Like, is it, I assume there? It's over an ocean, so you will have to get in your hot tub boat and float out to that spot, like in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and be like, ah, ha, ha, spiders, you can't get me.
You know, I'm okay with this. Also, I'm about to be the only bitch in Seattle that actually walks around with an umbrella because one of these days, how they get you. That's how the enemy countries get you. They just drop that atmospheric layer on top of us. It'll be spiders everywhere. I'm done. I'm not okay.
Oh, man.
Why did I creep myself out that much more?
Well, I bet Australia. I mean, I bet like if you are like, oh my God, what if you are an astronomer in Australia? You probably have to get like extra, like a super long telescope to pierce the spider layer. I just assume there's like a fog of spiders over Australia at all times.
I'm not okay. Alrighty. On that note, we're just going to dive into the story because
you're over here like scratch, 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 scratch.
I'm not okay.
I think you're all right. I think they're not coming down. I mean, they're happy. They're up there. You have a roof. They can't get you. There's a roof over you. You're safe. A ceiling, a whole ceiling between you and the drop spiders.
One cornered me in the bathroom the other day. It was real big. It was between me and the door. I threw my shoe at it. It ran. I screamed. I ran out of the bathroom. Couldn't do anything else because I was actually on the toilet at that moment. And it was standing between me and the door. And I was like, this is how one pisses on herself, running through the house.
Oh, no. Now you're like, that bathroom's the spiders now. I'm going to just go outside and pee in a bucket. That's what we're doing. Garden hose shower, peeing in a bucket in the backyard because that spider owns my bathroom now.
That spider may own my entire house now. Every once in a while, I just look around and I'm like, you're not here anymore, are you?
I'm glad it's clowns for me because I don't think there's a clown layer. I mean, what if there was a clown layer, a layer of airborne clowns just like hang gliding above us, just like... like a hang glider clown layer. And is it above or below the spider layer?
I'm not okay with any of this. Yeah, I'm just gonna go into my story now.
Okay, which I'm sure will be uplifting.
One of the most depressing stories I've ever done.
Cool, I like this for us.
Yep, I'm real happy.
Spiders,
for us.
Clowns, yep. Racism. Art history mysteries. It's been great. It's been a delightful treat already.
Yeah. So
cheers,
trigger warning for this episode. We will be discussing self-harm and unenliving oneself. Cool. For the most part, I will be referring to it as past tensing oneself or unenliving oneself instead of what we really call it. If this
algorithm gets all grumpy and
it does. And unfortunately,
so now we have to talk like weird babies because the algorithm's like, you can't talk about things. So now we say stuff like unaliving. And I'm not sure that that's better than like frank discussions of the S word and stuff. But sure. Okay. This is where we're at. This is the world we live in. And cool.
Yep.
Cool beans.
However, if this is a trigger point for you, then this is your warning. Or if you have thoughts of self-harm or, you know, unenliving oneself, please know that you're not alone. And you can reach out for help by either calling or texting 988. And please do reach out for help. some folks, we have semicolons in the sentences of our lives, you know, just don't make it a period. However, we understand if you need to come back to us with the next episode, do so. We'll be here and we definitely get it.
My name is Keely, and I host a true crime and paranormal podcast called Misty Mysteries. Misty Mysteries takes a special focus on unsolved cases and missing persons cases. All of my true crime episodes are made in hopes to raise awareness and bring justice to those who need it most. Most of these episodes are made in partnership or made with the families of the victims and missing people. But the podcast isn't always true crime. Sometimes I bring spooky content, like hauntings, aliens, and cryptids, such as the original story of The Conjuring House, The Life of Ed and Lorraine Warren, and Mothman. True crime and paranormal even cross at times to make two-part episodes, like The Bobby Mackie Music World, The Lizzie Borden House, and The Villisca Axe Murder House. Misty Mysteries is ready to be binge listened to with over 50 episodes anywhere you get your podcasts. I cannot wait to keep you company whenever and wherever you like to listen to your podcast.
Hi, I'm Heather.
And I'm Dylan. We are Mountain Murders, an Appalachian true crime podcast dropping weekly episodes every Sunday.
Our show offers well-researched cases with unique storytelling and southern flavor.
Stories so good, you'll want to sop them up with a biscuit.
Ooh, I pull back the curtain on lesser known and often obscure regional cases from Georgia to Maine, exploring the darkness that lurks deep in the heart of Appalachia.
And I react with profound statements.
You mean profoundly stupid statements?
Something like that.
We're not your stereotypical hillbillies.
But we do like moonshine.
It'll tickle your innards.
Join us every Wednesday for Mountain Murders Offbeat.
Offbeat is a mini episode covering a variety of topics from true crime to conspiracy theories, the paranormal, and Appalachian-centric subjects.
Find Mountain Murders anywhere you download podcasts. Hit subscribe today to catch up on our latest episodes or binge our catalog.
The Missing Magnolias podcast tells the stories of the missing and murdered.
Ultimately, these kids went into state custody and they never came out.
Together with missing persons expert Dr. Michelle Janis, we uncover the real true crime experience.
Every time we do another interview, I'm like, how do we find so many badass women?
We hear from victims who turn their pain into something positive.
We didn't find out till we were 11 or 12 years old that our mom was murdered.
In Times Square, it said Mickey Shunick fought for her life.
And experts who think outside the box to solve cases.
I scour missing persons databases like NamUs to see if they're uploaded to that database.
Subscribe to Missing Magnolias on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts today.
Are you looking for your next true crime podcast? Do you crave stories that have mystery and suspense? Well, look no further. Introducing Love and Murder, the podcast that dives deep into the world of relationships gone horribly wrong. Every week, I take you on a journey through the dark side of love, where passion turns into obsession, families become enemies, and romance turns to murder. From mysterious mysteries to suspenseful suspense, I dive deep into cases of love gone wrong. So why should you listen to Love and Murder? Because this is not just another true crime podcast. We're your partners in crime.
Not guilty!
Your storytellers and your weekly dose of suspenseful entertainment. How many times have I said suspenseful? So what are you waiting for? Join the Love and Murder family and become part of the Lamb community. Tune in every week for a new episode that will keep you hooked. Go ahead, hit that subscribe button now. Love and Murder, because you're either someone's last love or their first murder.
Love and Murder, available on all major podcast platforms. Not for true crimers under 18. Must be an apple juice drinking enthusiast, but not really. Side effects include enjoying another true crime podcast, becoming a lamb, learning logic and how to deal with your problems in a healthy manner, and not turning to murder. Waiting for the next episode of Love and Murder to drop every week. Visit our website at www.murderandlove.com.
And remember, all love and no murder. See you soon.
My resources for today's episode were Wikipedia, a fascinating article from Psychiatry and Clinical Neurosciences titled Cultural Influences on, and this is where I'm going to insert the actual word for unaliving in Japan. The National Library of Medicine, Ancient Origins, WordPress, How Stuff Works, BuzzFeed News, CNN, and the World Population Review. So today, we are going to discuss, and I really hope that I pronounce all of these words correctly. I am going to lean into the actual studies that I have done to learn Japanese. So if it is incorrect in some sense or way, please forgive me. I am trying.
Blame that Duolingo owl. He done you dirty.
You never can trust an owl.
Nope, not the Duolingo owl. Nope.
Today we are going to discuss Okigahara Forest, which translates to the meaning Blue Tree Meadow, and is also known as the Sea of Trees, or insert the actual word here for unaliving oneself, forest. And it can be found at the northwestern base of Mount Fuji in Japan. It is a devastatingly beautiful and haunting place that both thrills and terrifies me at the very thought of its existence. Yeah, that's right. This is one of the few places on Earth that truly, truly frighten me on a spiritual level. I mean, there are places out there that frighten me because of war and, you know, a lack of rights and things like that. But not, this is a different kind of frighten. And, you know, I try not to give it too much attention or thought because it leaves me feeling like I've caught the attention of something far more powerful or sinister than I am. So know that throughout the entire research period that I gave for this episode itself and this recording, I'm not okay. It's not just the back and the muscle relaxers because I'm squigged the fuck out.
Maybe you need to get some a Shinto priest to come in and clear the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fortunately, I sit near my own personal space of spiritual centering, and I will be turning in that direction directly after this episode. And before we dive heavily into the facts behind Okigahara Forest itself, I find it important to discuss the cultural differences between the historical societal acceptance of past tensing oneself, which, like I said, is how I'm going to be referring to that particular action moving forward in Japan and between the Western countries. Japan is one of the countries with the leading past tensing ratios in the world. And trust me when I tell you that it is likely a statistical rabbit hole you don't want to go down. Because if you're like me, you'll end up 5 pages deep into a crisis in the country that's leading that list and realize that you should have been asleep hours prior. It's chilling stuff. Anyhow, the longstanding social acceptance of past tensing oneself in Japan can be traced back to the historic practice of making the ultimate self-sacrifice in order to right one's honor and social standing within the group harmony in Japan. This mindset that the group whole is better than the happiness of oneself in Eastern cultures is often difficult for people of Western cultures and origin to understand, and their interpretation of what the Eastern cultures appear to believe is the ultimate sacrifice is instead viewed as a selfish decision. Now, in modern day society in Japan and Korea, the overwork-based past tensing of oneself is on the rapid rise. However, the views are beginning to slowly change, even though it is still a commonplace and more accepted practice than it is in the West. The most common practice of this in history was performed by samurai and is known as seppuku, which translates to the very literal definition of cut stomach. Today, in modern media like Shogun, which if you're not watching this, you should be. Are you watching Shogun?
No, because I live with Mr. No TV, and I'm like, he's kind of wants to watch it too, so I have to wait till he's ready to watch TV. Anyway, it's a thing. It's a dumb thing in our house. So I might just watch it and be like, you snoozed, you lost.
You should watch it.
Snossed, you lost. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's real good. It has one of my favorite actors in it. He's a tasty little snack, as always, but also just... wow, the acting, everything is so good. So well done. Costuming, everything. So well done. Anyway, other movies too, like 47 Ronin. You know, there's a lot of media out there which depict the act of seppuku, where it's reenacted in brutal realism. But it definitely gives you an idea of what was happening during that specific era. However, unless you think that it's all only culturally accepted for warriors avenging their honor, there is also the practice of shinju, a past tensing of lovers that translates to the depths of the heart. And you know, I know I've said it before, and I'm sure I will say it again, but the Japanese just name things better.
So this is sort of like the Sada Abe situation.
Yes.
You talked about her story in a previous episode, and that was sort of in that. Although she chose to past tense her significant other without perhaps his consent to this. So, yeah.
Unconsensual and shinju is just murder.
Yeah. So that was a whole, yeah. Yeah.
But yes. Often the act is a way to remain loyal to their family who oppose a relationship by avoiding disruption and disgrace while staying loyal to their love at the same time. Think Romeo and Juliet without the murder, subterfuge, and defiance. Yeah. So pretty much everything that made up the play. lest you think honor past tensing is a thing of the past, there are still cases of CEOs, business owners, and people in positions of public power that have colossally screwed the proverbial pooch and felt that the only way to redeem themselves in the eyes of the collective would be to past tense themselves. Now, the attitude is, like I said, definitely not the same as it was in feudal Japan. Thank the sweet scent of Santa for that. But there's still a far more permissive attitude in Japan in comparison to like us here in the US regarding that particular form of life ending.
Which might be kind of religiously based because Christianity is like, you're going to go to hell if you unalive yourself.
Yes.
And even people that don't necessarily adhere to those values, that general idea has sort of permeated our culture that it is sinful or wrong to do that. So
yes. I tell you all this so you can have a healthier understanding of why this weird creepy ass forest even came to be a past tensing hotspot, because that's exactly what it is. The last time Mount Fuji erupted was 1159 years ago. And with time, the volcanic lava rock eventually turned into the perfect noise-absorbing base for what would be a creepy-ass forest without the added features of that people would later give to it. The forest is incredibly beautiful, though, like I said, and has a few scenic caves that were created by the lava tubes, like the Nurusawa Ice Cave, which is where the Shogun used to get his ice in Edo from so many ages ago, which I think is pretty cool. When I go to Japan, if I ever did go to this forest, which P.S. I will not be doing, but if I did, I would love to see that cave and stand there and think to myself, yep, Shogun got his ice here many a moon ago.
Oh, the whole history of like refrigeration before refrigeration and ice and all of that kind of thing. Truly, truly a fascinating like situation, like how that worked. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, it looks like a place, in my opinion, the forest looks like a place where Fae would reside, or like some kind of
yokai.
Spirit magic. Yokai,
oh,
exactly.
Yokai are loose there.
So all of them, all of them. It's all green and dense with like old tree roots crawling over the volcanic rock. It's incredible. Yeah. It is. And
there are Totoros loose in there.
Oh, so many. There is an entire family of Totoros just waiting to greet you when you walk
in. Like, could we do an exchange program with Japan? We'd be like, look, we'll send you some Sasquatch. You send us some Totoro, and like, it's like an exchange. Can we do that? Who do we talk to about that?
I think we have to talk to the Sasquatch.
Well, right. When we'd have to be like, what do you think, guys? Like, could we do like a sister city situation, but like for weird forest creatures that may or may not exist?
I think Seattle might be able to. After all, it is Japan's fault that I'm like this with my sinuses every season because of the 1,000 fucking cherry trees they gifted us. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. It's lovely.
Give us some damn Totoro. Make it up. They're so cute.
I could have a Totoro. I'd be down for that. Yeah. NECA would be pissed. All right, guys. After that little short break where I took myself some more muscle relaxer and Lynn tried to kill me with comedy, we are going to dive back into it here. So the place looks like, you know, Fae live there, spirits, yokai, or Yuri, which are known as the angry ghost of Japan. And supposedly they really do reside within the forest. And if the Yuri are not enough to worry about, well, the Asian black bears and boars also called the forest a home. So they could be. And if any of you are wondering why I felt the need to associate boars with bear on the danger scale, let me answer your curiosity by sharing a saying that the white trash side of my family used to say. He went to shit and the hogs got him.
Hey, now, 30 to 40 feral hogs. There you go. If you remember that meme from a few years ago. Yeah. No, yeah. Do not mess. Like, pigs straight up will eat you alive. So
they
no
will.
Thank you.
They really will.
Oh, yeah, I am afraid of pigs. Like, nope. No thank you.
There are many stories in my family from several generations ago on that white trash side and I know that saying is just, it's classy and it gets the point across, and it's not often one runs into such an all-encompassing colloquialism, so you're welcome. So this forest seems to have always had the visage of death associated with it. And I have to wonder, you know, is it because of the lava rock absorbing the sound, or just the way it looks, or because it's close to Mount Fuji, which was a sacred site, and therefore it is a sacred site too. But claiming that it was a long time site for the practice of Abasute, I think that is how you pronounce that. I hope so. Which is when a person abandons the elderly, like a parent or an elderly dependent in the wilderness to meet their end. So, you know, people have always been great.
So basically it's like, oh, we took the dog to go live on a farm. We took grandma. We took Obasan to go live on a farm.
Yeah.
A farm. She went to live in the woods.
Yes.
Yes.
And who knows? Maybe this is part of the reason why there's this mythos of the old woman in the woods, right? That witch who was left out there, abandoned and apart from society.
I like to imagine like there's a whole colony of real pissed off old people that are like, come into the forest, kids. Like, and they got a reason to be. So maybe. Yeah. Like Baba Yaga. There you go.
This is how Baba Yaga came about. This is the origin. So we actually don't know if this is a factual practice or not. It can't be determined since our written records of cases of Apasute are all cautionary folk tales against the practice. However, I would like to point out that we don't have many cautionary folk tales in modern day over the evils of like squid juggling. And yet, how many tales of teenage pregnancy woe did you hear growing up, right? Point being, how often does man really create cautionary tales for something that we don't need caution for? Another disturbing fact, and you're in the right place for it, that I ran across while doing this research is whether this practice was real or not back in antiquity. It doesn't mean that it isn't happening now. In fact,
oh no, don't take grandma to the woods. No, don't do it. No,
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at the practice. I'm laughing at you.
I don't like this. Don't take grandpa to the farm. Don't do it.
Your face when you're saying it too is so good. I know you don't. Neither do I. None of us do. Grandma doesn't want to live on a farm.
No.
Or maybe she does. Grandma wants to live is what we're saying.
To live is the operative word that we need to stress in this sentence. Yes. Live in the woods. Live on a farm.
Anyway, it appears that a resurgence of this practice, or just a surgence of this practice, is happening in modern Japan right now, along with, you know, the rise of poverty and the plummeting birth metrics. So as the elder generation gets larger and the younger generation gets smaller and poverty is on the rise, it makes it very difficult to care for them. In fact, even one of the political figures in Japan pretty much just told the old people to go and die, the elderly generation to go and die, instead of living off of the government. It's kind of messed up. Kind of really messed up. So there's a cat in the camera. I love
Sorry.
It. Mox.
Yeah, Moxie. Now she's just going to go sit in my printer. So
the closest thing we have to the actual documentation of this practice comes from the Sengoku Jidai, also known as the Warring States period of 1467 through 1603, when not only the old, but also the young that families couldn't feed were left behind in the forest. Like, they were specifically taken to this forest and left there. Aside from the legends of this macabre practice, abandoning the elderly there in the forest, it's also known for being the place where those who wished to pass tense themselves while on pilgrimage to Japan's most spiritual site, Mount Fuji, would find themselves instead. Rather than tarnish the purity of their spiritual mountain, they would retreat to the sacred forest that is what we know in modern times as the most haunted place in Japan. The first documented case of past tensing oneself in the forest happened in 1340. When a Buddhist monk named Shokai ended his journey in this realm by ritual fasting. Ritual fasting. That is hardcore. And it's a pattern that would be repeated by many, spiritually driven over hundreds of years.
So before World War II, there was also a widely common held belief that if a person wandered into the forest, they would be trapped in a perpetual twilight between the living and the spirit realms. It's like an in-between place, a place where the veil is thin, almost kind of like purgatory, it sounds like, in certain other beliefs. The interesting thing is that science does lend some credence to the myth that people get lost there, because there's a high iron content in the volcanic rock, which causes compasses and other types of navigation equipment to lose their effectiveness. In fact, even the most high-tech navigation equipment we have to this day loses its effectiveness in this forest, leading to actual cases of people becoming lost and meeting their ends amidst the trees. And is part of the reason why the Japanese military does its training inside the barriers of this forest. Contemporary media has really been the catalyst to the increasing in past tensings with each year here, though. Since in 1960, now I think you actually, did you do a story about Seiichi Matsumoto, or is that just a very in-depth conversation that I had with a friend of mine?
I think we've done a lot of, I think I mentioned him in one of the stories that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that I did, because I know, yeah, I think he wasn't like the story, but I think he was part of a story that I did. It's been a moment.
And you know, we've talked a lot in the last 6 years about a lot of disturbing shit and interesting people
right?
who are linked to disturbing shit and our interests, which are not normal. So who knows at this point?
Maybe a listener remembers.
Maybe a listener knows. We don't know what we say. How are we supposed to be held accountable for this?
It's been, what, how many years? Like say. 5 years? Sometimes.
We're on six.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, we're on season six. In 1960, Seicho Matsumoto, the man who would be known as the Japanese best-selling author of the 60s.
Yep.
And an absolute troubadour in his craft at that time, wrote his widely popular novel, Nami no Tu, or Tower of Waves. It's a popular tragedy where the heroine finds herself exiting this plane by her own hands in the Ogikahara forest. The story was so popular that it boosted the awareness of the forest to the world stage. And to use the term from our modern language, it went viral. The current statistics behind the exact amount of life lost in the forest is being currently kept under wraps by the government, according to everything that I read, at least. But estimated last year, there were 200 semicolons added to each individual sentences of lives of those who had entered the forest. And the number of actual ends or periods that were met each year is roughly somewhere between 30 to 100. Since the viral novel itself hit the shelves in 1960. That's a lot of people. Now, in modern day, when you venture into the forest, you will find many signs, laminated messages of hope, offers of help, all kinds of things all over the trails, urging those who enter with dark thoughts to reconsider. You'll also see ropes and plastic streamers and twine that can be found tied off and leading off in all sorts of directions from the trails. And if you follow those paths that people have left behind, sometimes you're going to find a person struggling at a campsite, or even worse,
You could find them after their struggle and their story have ended. The most common way people tend to past tense themselves in this forest is either by hanging or by overdose. And the authorities have started placing cameras at the forest entry points in hopes of tracing the people that enter, because sometimes people just aren't found. It can take years, if at all. And annually, the authorities will enter on a body recovery effort to pull out as many victims of self-assassination as they can find. There are also people who volunteer their time walking the trails to find those who are struggling and offer help, as well as find those who are past their immediate realm of help, or at least past any help beyond bringing them home one last time. If those noble volunteers were not the icing of goodwill on top of this particular sad cake, then the monks are. You see, to this day, monks routinely visit the forest so they can pray for the souls of the departed to help them from becoming trapped in vengeful spirits. They pray for them since this sacred forest has absorbed the sadness, death, and complete desolation for centuries. And now, if you're a believer of the woo, like I am, or in the scientific principle of like attracting like I do, I'm sure you'll see this forest for the concern that it could be. Those who whisper of angry spirits, Yuri, say that they whisper words of lure, drawing in the innocent. They supposedly find dark cracks of depression in the heart of any hiker that they can whisper to, and they exploit it, turning the unwary soul away from the light and life, unable to leave the forest boundaries ever after. When researching other past tensing hotspots, the majority of the data that I found listed only one other place on Earth that's more popular for past tensing oneself. And that spot is...
Ooh, I know this one because I'm a terrible person.
Yes. And you and I'm sure, have both driven over it. I have many times.
Yeah,
and what is it, Lynn?
It's the Golden Gate Bridge.
You're right. It is absolutely the Golden Gate Bridge. And modern media, influencers, and everything in between have exploited the horror aspect of this amazing, sacred forest, this traditionally sacred and terribly sorrowful place. And, you know, I am a horror junkie. We know that. I love horror movies, good, bad, all of it. I love it. And I'm of Western descent. So, of course, I've seen all of them that I can, despite some of them that have to do with this particular subject. Yes, I have seen them. However, that's not what this episode's about. And so I'm choosing not to highlight them here. If you want to go out of your way and find them, feel free. None of them are good. Just I can promise you that. And that's my story. Sad.
Oh.
Deep.
And then, yeah. And I like that this is a respectful factual thing, because there was a well-known YouTuber who we will not mention that did some truly awful, disrespectful, hey guys, we're going to go into the S forest and like, check it out. Maybe we'll find an unalive person. And like, dude, no, come on, man. Like, I feel like it's sort of the thing with like cemetery photography, right? I love to go into cemeteries. I like to take photos, but I'm very, I try not to do a lot of modern gravestones, just because those are people that still have people that are thinking about them, feeling ways about them. And like, yeah, I feel like the, ooh, this is, you know, the exploitative nature of a fascinating landmark of the macabre like this is, I think you gotta show a little class, show a little heart, guys, you know, like don't be gross about this.
We have to remember this is a place that even before it was associated in modern times with this level of disturbing horror or disturbing tourism, it was a sacred site. I mean, the reason this happened and people went there for this purpose is because it was a sacred site. It was holy and meant something to them to begin with. So that alone, just respect for people's culture and their sacred beliefs, should be something that we hold. But even more so here, because we are talking about people who have many, many people who have met the ends of their journey in the spot, whether by their own choice or because they got lost by accident, because someone took them there, because people are awful, who knows? But the point is, this is a site where we should be respectful. And that's the way I'm going to treat it. That's the way I'm treating this story. The subject matter alone needs to have more attention brought to it. I mean, we can't even call it what it is as it is because the algorithm doesn't like it.
We're weird about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no nuance, right? We're not saying, go do this to yourself. Like, you should totally visit. We're saying the opposite. We're saying, like, this is a part of human behavior and culture that has been viewed as everything from a social good to a shame, right? Mm-hmm. And like, perhaps the more we talk about it, the more we normalize that, everybody's brain occasionally is like, hey, guess what you could do? You know,
absolutely.
Like it happens, right? And like, how do you help people not take action in this? You know, I think about our own Aurora Bridge here in Seattle, which is one of the most popular places to take your last skydive, let's put it that way, and how many people have met their end on that. And the fact that it has only been in the last, I would say, decade or so that they actually have put up fencing to prevent this sort of thing. So, you know, I'm glad that we're taking things like this more seriously and helping to prevent it, but it's still a big problem. Yeah.
It is. It's a really big problem. And if you think you haven't been affected by it, I guarantee you just don't realize it. There are people who you talk to, people you love, people you listen to on podcasts, people who wrote books that you love to read, people you respect, people you find fascinating, people who you look up to, people you envy. We all have people who have either tried, struggled with, or thought of past tensing themselves. And so for today's do something, unlike the normal now where we are sponsoring one specific topic or nonprofit or something like that every quarter of the show, pretty much. Instead, today I'm going to say, for your do something, our call to action, if you know somebody who is struggling, give them the suicide prevention hotline number. Offer to take them to see your therapist. Offer to listen if you can. Because sometimes that's all somebody needs, is somebody who will listen. Offer to spend more time with them. Loneliness is one of the greatest diseases we are facing as a culture that has never been so connected and yet so devoid of connection. Instead of anything else, be there for somebody who needs you. If you see somebody who just seems like they're struggling a little, maybe they're making a few too many jokes. Maybe they're trying just a little bit too hard to cover it. You know, maybe you don't want to blow their cover and expose them because they are clearly not ready for that. But just offer to spend a little bit more time with them. Take them out for coffee. Ask them if there's something bothering them. Sometimes that is the biggest do something that we can do, is give the ones around us our time. Nothing is as precious as our time.
Yeah, just let people know, hey, I'm glad you're on the planet.
Yeah, that's all it takes sometimes.
It'd be a shittier Earth without you.
And it would. It would be a shittier Earth without you. It would be a shittier Earth without all of our listeners out there. So if you're somebody who's struggling, no, please, we would miss you. You
have don't even people. Know you, but we would miss you. We psychically sense you're out there.
We want more Disturbed to become part of the army, not less.
Right? Yes. You know what Earth needs? Earth needs more thoughtful weirdos. So yeah. don't exit. You know? Stay and be in the army of the weird but good. You know?
Yeah. Be in the army.
You don't want the shitty normies. Yeah, you don't want jerks to be in charge. God. Yeah, no. We don't want those people to outnumber us. Hell no.
We've seen what happens when that happens.
Right?
Anyway, so yeah, after that lovely upbeat episode, please Woo-hoo! Know I'm squigged the fuck out. And it is very important, but I am squigged the fuck out. You know, two things can't be true at the same time. And I guess we're, let's do weebin' out. Weebin' out. Let's end on a happy note. Weebin' out.
Gosh, I don't know. I haven't been watching anything new other than like the usual things like Dungeon Meshy.
I have something.
What have you been enjoying?
So there is this new anime called Grim Variations up on Netflix, and they are variations of the Grim fairy tales. And it's like Cinderella. If Cinderella was actually the bad guy in the story, and made it look like everybody had done all this stuff to her.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Yeah, so it's really good. What if the wolf was actually a serial killer?
I mean, that seems legit. That seems like he seems like he was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been fun. I've been watching that one lately. I'm only a couple episodes in, but the art's really pretty. The variations on the story tales are fun. And I'm somebody who likes fairy tales. So yeah, that's my new enjoyment for Weebin' Out. Yep. Yeah.
I'm just so the Seattle International Film Festival will be taking place in just a few weeks time. So we got our like festival passes picked up. And we got our little guide. So I've been looking through that like, ooh. So perhaps next episode I will be able to be like, this is what we're going to see. So I'll be giving you like updates throughout the next couple of weeks on what I saw and what you might want to see too.
Awesome. That sounds great. Alrighty. Well, I guess on that note, take care of
yourself. Go lie down.
Oh, I'm gonna. But take care of each other. And remember, you might be disturbed, but...
You know what? You're not alone. Not even going to be funny about this one. You're not...
Thanks for listening, friends. Please remember to like, subscribe, and tell a friend. And check us out on social media. On Facebook, we are the Disturbing Interests Podcast. Twitter, podcast_DI. Instagram, DI Podcast. Or if you really want to send us something, you can send it to our P.O. Box at 70515 Seattle, Washington, 98127.